Okay, so this is the lecture on electron transport and oxidative phosphorylation. It's how to make bucket loads of ATP. Now, cellular respiration, why do we do it? The goal is staying alive. How do we continue to keep staying alive? Well, we convert energy from a form that's unusable by the cell to a form which is usable by the cell, right? We convert glucose to ATP. Okay? So, and as you can see there, there's my head on the body of John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever. Okay? How many people have seen the movie Saturday Night Fever? Okay, a few of you. Okay, so you know, in this movie, John Travolta struts across the dance floor and he does these great dance moves. And so I'm going to do a great dance move right now, like John Travolta. But I'm no John Travolta. But what he would do is he would kind of does the motion like that, right? You know, hand down, hand up, and I'm going to do it like this. Okay, you get it? This is how we stay alive. We go from glucose to ATP. Oh yeah, okay. So you guys need to go back and watch Saturday Night Fever. Okay, cool. Okay, now onto something a little bit more normal. The story thus far. We have seen how one molecule of glucose has been catabolized. Do you remember that word? Into the following molecules. First of all, glycolysis has generated two ATP and two NADHs. The bridge has generated two NADHs. The Krebs cycle has generated two ATP, six NADHs, and two FADH2. So there's where all of our energy is so far. But there's still a problem, and the problem is one glucose has only produced four ATPs, right? And we need more ATPs. In fact, a lot more if we want to keep, right? Yeah, if we want to keep staying alive. Okay. So, where the action is occurring. Here's a beautiful 3D illustration of a mitochondria, that little used-to-be prokaryote that invaded us, you know, billions of years ago, right? Invaded some eukaryote. It has been with eukaryotes ever since. And if we go back and we look, okay, where are things happening? We take a look. If you look at the mitochondria, you can see that there's a beautiful two-membrane structure. Okay? Awesome. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But if you take a look at the lower picture, you'll see that the Krebs cycle is occurring inside the inner sanctum of the mitochondria. It's the matrix of the mitochondria. That's where the Krebs cycle is occurring. And therefore, the matrix is full of NADH and FADH2, because that's what pretty much the Krebs cycle is cranking out with each turn, right? So what's the solution? The solution to this problem of not much ATP and lots of NADH and FADH2 is what we call electron transport and oxidative phosphorylation. And what happens in this process is there's a conversion of energy from NADH and FADH2. Remember, those are very rich, energy-rich molecules, into ATP. Now, how is this done? Well, it's done by using the energy from these two energy-rich molecules, NADH and FADH2, to pump hydrogen ions out of the mitochondrial matrix into the intermembrane space. And if you look at the picture here, here's the Krebs cycle inside the matrix, and if you look at the membrane, you'll see some arrows, and you'll see that, and you'll see little hydrogen ions in the intermembrane space. This is also called the outer compartment, this blue area. And so what's happening is lots of hydrogen ions are being pumped out of the matrix into the intermembrane space. Now, before we move any further in this lecture, I want to remind you, there's an overarching theme in this course. And the theme is this: structure leads to function. So if we think about why is the mitochondria have a particular structure, the structure being a two membrane structure, like why in the world do you need two membranes? I mean, after all, don't most organelles and most cells just need one membrane? Well, it turns out that because structure leads to function, if you see a two-membrane structure, you must ask yourself, there must be a reason for it. And indeed there is, and we're going to find out why right now. Turns out that by having two membranes, you can actually isolate hydrogen ions on one side of that membrane. So you can kind of store them there. And look what happens. You pump them from the matrix out into the intermembrane space. Then what you do is, because there's lots of hydrogen ions in that intermembrane space, they want to flow down their concentration gradient. They don't want to all be together, okay? This is the process, natural process called diffusion, which you've learned about in a previous bio course, and we'll talk a little bit about more in a later lecture, but I think you all know this. So these hydrogen ions want to kind of get away from each other. And so what's in the membrane is this, there's a hole in the membrane, special hole, provided by this enzyme called ATP synthase. And that's where the hydrogen ions can come back into the matrix. And in the process, ATP is synthesized. So that's the big picture. Now let's take a little bit closer look at that and how it works. So it's really a two-step process. So we're going to zoom in and zero in on this. The first step is called electron transport. And if you take a close look now at the membrane, you'll see that there's a group of enzymes embedded in the membrane. That's important. It's called the electron transport chain. A whole bunch of different enzymes. And what they do is they grab electrons from NADH or FADH2, and then they move the electrons along from one enzyme to the next to the next. That process of moving electrons from one enzyme to another is an exergonic process. It's a process that is able to do work. And the work that's done is the pumping of hydrogen ions from the matrix inside to the intermembrane space here, also known as the outer compartment. And so that's what this does. So it's an exergonic process. It pumps these hydrogen ions out. Now, once the hydrogen ions are outside and they're sitting there, they're stored as potential energy. It's like water behind a dam. Now, if you think about, let's think about Lexington Dam. Lexington Dam is this structure that holds back a lot of water. Now, that water, of course, just falls from the sky and then flows down into Lexington. It could be pumped there, just like is going on here. But the bottom line is, if you've got a whole bunch of water behind a dam, that's potential energy. That potential energy, it's really gravitational potential energy. If you then have a hole in the dam or some kind of pipe that goes through the dam, then you can convert that gravitational potential energy into kinetic energy as the water flows through that pipe or through that hole. And if you put a little turbine somewhere in that flow, the kinetic energy of the water as it flows can turn a turbine. Now, a turbine, of course, is connected to magnets and a coil of wire. So then the kinetic energy, the turning, which is kinetic energy, can be translated or transformed, I suppose is the best word, into electrical energy. So it's just a series of energy conversions from gravitational potential energy to kinetic energy, finally to electrical energy. The same thing is going on here in the mitochondria. We're, instead of storing water behind a dam, we're storing hydrogen ions in this, what's called the intermembrane space. And then what we do is we provide just like a, you know, in the example I just gave, there is a hole that goes back through the membrane, and it's through this enzyme. The enzyme I said is ATP synthase, and you can see it right here. And that provides a hole for the hydrogen ions to flow back through. When they flow back through, they actually, it's kind of funny. It's just kind of like a turbine. They actually spin. There's a spinning action that happens on this protein, and in that spinning process, ADP is converted into ATP. So you're converting the energy, once again, from the potential energy into sort of a kinetic energy of sorts, I guess, into chemical energy of ATP. Okay, that's what's going on. Yeah. That inorganic phosphate is just around, it's in the cell. There's lots of ions floating around in this, in them, they're there, and they just grab them and go. Okay. So let's the second step is the synthesis. So the first part was the electron transport, where you pump the ions out. Now you go through what's called ATP synthesis, and once I, again, I'll say there's a special enzyme called ATP synthetase. By the way, I want to make a note. Depending on what book you read or what website you read, you may see the term ATP synthase or ATP synthetase. And as far as I can tell, maybe wrong, but as far as I can tell, they're synonymous. Some books say synthetase, some books say synthase. Okay, some websites say, so either one is fine, and I actually have them both in my lecture to emphasize that they're really the same as far as I know, and don't get confused by that. Okay, so the enzyme is embedded in the membrane. It has a hole. It allows the hydrogen ions to come back through, and as they come back through, the ATP is synthesized. So it's a two-step process. There you go. Now, let's take a look at the details. As the electrons are transferred along the chain, energy is transferred as well, okay? Like I said, so the members of the chain are collected into a complex as shown below. This is an awesome picture. It's not very big on my slide here, but it's from your book, and I highly recommend you take a look at it. If you look at the bottom of the slide, you'll see a lipid bilayer with a bunch of proteins embedded in that lipid bilayer. These proteins, by the way, this lipid bilayer is the inner membrane of the mitochondria. At the bottom, below the lipid bilayer, that's the matrix, so that's the inner part of the mitochondria, and above it is the inner membrane space, just so you kind of orient yourself. Now, you'll see that these enzymes embedded, these are the enzymes of the electron transport chain. And what you can see here is actually very cool. And by the way, tonight what I'd like you to do is look at the CD-ROM. The CD-ROM basically has this illustration, and it shows an animation of this process. So it really clearly shows you the movement of electrons, the movement of hydrogen ions, the whole process. It's really beautiful. So if you're a visual learner, you will, 5 to 10 minutes on the CD-ROM, it'll all become clear to you. It's wonderful, a study aid. So what happens is, down here, you see in yellow, NADH and FADH2 are giving off electrons. The electrons in this picture are, see the yellow? The yellow kind of go from one protein to the next, These are all enzymes. And finally, at the very end, this molecule here is oxygen, because oxygen is the ultimate electron acceptor. And in fact, if you think about it, you guys, this is kind of cool. Ever wonder, like, why we breathe every day? Why do we breathe? Why do we inhale oxygen? Why is it important? Well, guess what? This is why. Because this is kind of cool. Maybe you've never thought about this. In order for the electrons to move through this electron transport chain, they need to have a home at the end of their journey. And the home is provided by oxygen. The oxygen will grab the electrons, combine with hydrogen, and form water, which is, you can't see it maybe from where you're sitting, but that's water, and that's oxygen. And it's grabbing electrons and forming water. And what happens is amazing. Here, check it out. The NADH is the thing, and the FADH2 are given off the electrons. The electrons are transmitted along. That process is what pumps the hydrogen ions through the membrane. Now, imagine if you don't have oxygen, you're not providing a place for the electrons to go, a final home for the electrons. And if you don't, then this whole process comes to a screeching halt. Think about it. If this process comes to a screeching halt, electrons are no longer moving through the membrane, therefore hydrogen ions aren't being pumped out, and therefore hydrogen ions aren't coming back through and making ATP, what happens to your ATP production? It goes south. It stops. And because the energy currency of the cell is ATP, you basically stopped all energetic processes in the cell. Now, if you think about this, you all know that if you stop breathing for more than like 5 minutes, the first cells in your body to die are your brain cells, because they require the most amount of energy of any cells in your body. And so they constantly need oxygen because they're constantly producing ATP. So 5 minutes, even before 5 minutes, you'll actually start getting brain damage. So the cells in your brain just start dying because they don't have ATP. So the oxygen, the reason we get oxygen, we need oxygen, is for your brain cells, most importantly, to produce ATP so then they can work. It's that simple. So, I don't know if you've ever thought about that, but it's really a powerful idea. And it really explains. So you might go, this week on cellular respiration, I'm not really into it. Well, this explains life, okay? So you may not be into the mitochondria and what's going on with all this chemistry, but this is why you breathe every day, okay? And if you stop breathing, within 5 minutes, your brain starts dying, and within 10 minutes, you're brain dead, okay? And maybe even sooner, actually. The final product is water, which is why we breathe out water vapor. So I want you to think about this. Let's just go back and think about this. This is really amazing. Every day, multiple times a minute, we breathe in oxygen, and then we exhale carbon dioxide and water, right? Well, the oxygen is used here. The carbon dioxide, where does the carbon dioxide come from? Where does the carbon dioxide come from? Yeah, the Krebs cycle. Two of the carbon dioxides come from the Krebs cycle. Where's the other carbon dioxide come from? Yeah, the bridge. One of them comes from the bridge. And so really you took a pyruvate molecule, which is a three-carbon molecule, and you ripped it apart. One of the carbons came off as carbon dioxide in the bridge, and two came off during the Krebs cycle. Okay? So that's it. And then, of course, the water comes off as a result of combining the electrons combining with the oxygen. Yeah, well, the electrons themselves actually come from the NADH, okay? But I would say the carbon molecules are really, that's where the energy was stored. So the pyruvate is where the energy is stored. And so as you rip apart the pyruvate, you're now transferring the energy that was in the pyruvate into NADH, FADH2, and ATP. And then you just get rid of these, whatever's left, which is carbon, in the form of carbon dioxide. Not a lot of energy there anymore. Okay. So the key idea here is by transferring the electrons by the transfer of electrons through the electron transport chain, that provides the energy to pump the hydrogen ions out of the matrix. Okay. A quick little picture of ATP synthesis. This is your ATP synthase enzyme, and you can see that it's embedded in the membrane. It's kind of cool. Check it out, you guys. Out here is the outer compartment. There's your lipid bilayer. That's your inner membrane. And then down below here is the matrix. And you can see this crazy thing called ATP synthase, and there's a hole in it. Hydrogen ions come rushing through, and it literally spins around. And as it does that, ADP picks up an inorganic phosphate and becomes ATP. And that's how it's made. So you want to know where ATP comes from, that's ultimately where it comes from. Kind of cool. This whole process has a fancy name. It's called chemiosmosis. And you'll probably recognize the word osmosis and chemi. And so it's really the process of coupling the movement of electrons across the inner mitochondrial membrane with the production of, coupling the movement of hydrogen ions, I should say, across the inner mitochondrial membrane with the production of ATP, called chemiosmosis. And it's really the mechanism that causes oxidative phosphorylation. And if you think about this, think about the word oxidative phosphorylation. Where does the oxidative part come from? Why do we say oxidative? Oxidative, yeah. Yeah, what's the ultimate acceptor of electrons? What's the ultimate acceptor? Oxygen. So that's where the oxidative part comes from. And phosphorylation, where does the phosphorylation come from? Right, adding a phosphate to ADP to make ATP. So that's where we get this word. So now you understand oxidative phosphorylation. It's kind of cool. By the way, this process was first theorized in the early 60s and by a guy named Peter Mitchell. And he was considered, the people didn't, they're like, what? This is nuts. What do you mean? Ah, moving hydrogen ions across the inner membrane? You know, what are you talking about? And people didn't believe him for years and years and years. And finally, after a number of years, we're talking like 10 years, 15 years, a bunch of experiments and so forth, finally people believed him. And he ended up winning the Nobel Prize for this. So the discovery of this process was not trivial. It was really took a long time, a lot of theoretical work, and then a lot of experimental work to finally nail it down and figure out how this, you know, how this process works. Okay. Now let's do an energy count real quick. Glycolysis, 2 ATP, 2 NADH. We all know that. Bridge, 2 NADH. Krebs cycle, 2 ATP, 6 NADH, 2 FADH2. Okay, so that's where the energy count is now. Now let's layer in what we've just learned. If we take all this NADH and FADH2, how much ATP is produced? Well, first of all, let me tell you something. For every NADH, you get 3 ATPs. That's pretty nice. And for every FADH2, you get 2 ATPs. You should remember those numbers. You have to know those numbers. That will be on the test. You don't get quite as much energy from FADH2. NADH2, NADH has more energy. So let's do the math. If you count up all the NADHs, there's 10 of them. And since each one of them gives you 3 ATPs, the total is going to be 30 ATPs. Well, now we're talking, okay, right? Up until now, we only had 4 ATPs. Now we have 30. Woo, that's great. FADH2 gives you 2 ATPs for each one. 2 times 2 is 4. So the 2 FADH2 gives you 4 ATPs. Other sources of ATP. If we look up here, we see that glycolysis gives us a net of 2 ATPs. Krebs cycle gives us a net of 2 ATPs. And then so our total ATP count now at the end of all of this process is 38 ATPs. And I say approximately. And here's why I say approximately. Because 1 ATP is a toll for each. There's really a toll. So remember that in the glycolysis, the NADH is outside of the mitochondria. The NADH has to come into the mitochondria. How does it get in? It has to pay a toll. It has to pay a toll of 1 ATP. So you have 2 NADHs that are outside of the mitochondria. Each one of them needs to come in, but each one of them has to pay a toll of 1 ATP. So if you actually do the math, that means really the total energy is 36 ATPs in total in some cells. Now, in some cases, there isn't a toll, so you actually get 38. So just be aware of that if there's a question on the AP exam or my exam, realize that there is this toll. Some books will say you get 36 ATPs, some will say 38, and it depends if they consider this toll or not. Okay? Finally, very last slide. This is a beautiful slide. You know what this is? This is like your Clef's notes or your Spark notes of everything I've talked about all week. One slide summarizing it all. But just check it out. You can just study this and know most of what you need to know for the test. Remember, cellular respiration, a drama in three parts. Act one, glycolysis. Glucose produces two pyruvates and two ATPs and two NADHs. Kind of cool. You move the pyruvate into the mitochondria, you end up with two acetyl coenzyme A's. In the process, you get two NADHs. The two acetyl coenzyme A's feed into the Krebs cycle. The Krebs cycle turns around. You end up with two ATPs. You have to do two turns, right? And then you end up with six NADHs and two FADH2s. All that stuff, all the NADHs and FADH2s, feed into the electron transport chain and oxidative phosphorylation and produce a total of 34 ATPs. You add all this up, and you get 38 ATPs. If you consider the toll here to get the NADHs in, you're going to subtract 2 ATP and you'll have 36. So this is a wonderful summary. It shows Act 1, glycolysis, Act 2, the Krebs cycle, Act 3, the electron transport chain and oxidative phosphorylation. Awesome. Yeah. It's happening continuously. I don't know personally how far, like if you're actually going to say from the moment glucose begins the process until you get all your ATPs. I don't know how fast that is. I'm sure some chemist could tell you, some biochemist could tell you. Okay? Great.